Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Tracy Epps.
I'm Allie Nimmons.
Our guest today is Dee Teal. Dee has been a blogger, developer, and freelancer, and is currently project manager team lead with Human Made, a WordPress agency and product company. Welcome, Dee.
Hi, guys. Nice to see you.
We like to start off each episode asking our guests how they got into WordPress. How did you get started?
I spent a really long time working my way into web development in a large not-for-profit group in Sydney in the early 2000s. We were working on a CMS, we were fiddling around with it. It was made in ASP, so I was learning kind of all of the basics of how this thing works on this, what is now, of course, quite an archaic system. And as I spent more and more time working with that, I started exploring outside of work other ways to do web stuff. And people were asking me, can you build me this? Can you build me a website? And so I was building all of these static websites. And of course, the more and more you dig in, the more you want to be able to do. And so while I was doing that for friends, I was also running my own blog. It was on Movable Type. Movable Type started to become a paid product. I wanted to stick with the free.
I remember that very vividly.
Oh my goodness, it was a scene. So bit by bit, I was using WordPress personally and then started to see the benefits for it professionally. And I think I made that final leap to making all of my client projects. In 2009, I think I did my first client project on WordPress in 2009. And then progressively, by that stage, I was freelancing and came across the community and my first WordCamp in 2011. That's a really kind of nutshell story. It's a long story.
So I remember I did I was on Movable Type and then went into WordPress. What was your most, what do you remember what the most difficult thing of transferring that, or was that like, because I don't really remember it, but I did. And once it was starting to pay, I was like, oh, well, I already have worked with WordPress. But that process of going from HTML and then Movable Type and into WordPress, how was that?
Can we give a little background of what Movable Type was for anyone who doesn't know, to give, because I don't know what that is. So I don't have any context for that question.
Oh, nice.
Well, so blogging was kicking off, right, in those early 2000s. And so there were all of these different platforms that people were using for blogging. There's, of course, Blogger, which, of course, was Google's product, and WordPress. And then Movable Type was another product put out by Six Apart.
B2 was before WordPress.
Yeah.
Cafe Log. And that first blog was on that. And then that was forced to become WordPress.
Yeah.
And Movable Type kind of came around that same time, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I don't remember the timing of all of that. I just picked it up because that was the thing that people were using. But the difference with, you know, WordPress is a PHP database type product, whereas Movable Type was a Perl product and it was static publishing. So you would fill all of your, you would create your entry in the little interface, it's not that little, in the interface that they provided, and then you would hit publish. And then Movable Type would rebuild your whole site. So it was rebuilding all of these static pages. So every time you hit publish, it just took forever. You know, the longer your blog was, the longer it took. But the thing that I loved about Movable Type was that you could use variables within the sheets and change your colors and bits and pieces by just changing one variable. And I remember being frustrated for years until we could actually do things like that in WordPress using SAS. And so when SAS hit and I was fiddling around with that, I'm like, oh, I'm back where I was all those years ago when I was tweaking Perl modules. Like, so sorry. Yeah, you got the technical version then. But it was a blogging tool with a little bit of a different process for publishing.
That's awesome. I didn't know much about the back end because I was still kind of learning, and I was using it. I want to say maybe starting to dive into like making themes and customizing stuff, because I started off with just HTML, yeah. CSS. And then, yeah. But then when I got into WordPress, I really started getting into like the themes and all of that, like into the PHP and the backend stuff. But so I don't
CSS
know. I always
was a mystery for me for so long. Like I remember, you know, when you start learning something and you plug away at it and you go, yeah, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm no idea why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it took, I remember weeks and weeks with CSS going, do not understand what is happening here. And then that moment when you go, oh, it was one of, like, in my career, like, it's one of those best moments going, I figured, like, I couldn't do it now. I haven't touched code for years, but those moments, I'm like, yeah, this is why I do this. That those moments that you get from time to time.
I had that moment when I got the template hierarchy with WordPress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Once that clicked, yeah. I was like, oh, the possibilities were endless.
For anyone who's watching the video, I'm going to hold up this book, and this is what got me through.
Oh, yeah.
CSS anthology from SitePoint. SitePoint. See how damaged this is?
Oh, nice.
Like, there's like the there's coffee stains.
Amazing. Like,
so I just kind of married this book. It was just stuck to my desk, and nice. I just spent every time I needed to do something, I would just look it up in the SitePoint CSS anthology, and that's how I figured
out. I think I've got a tutorial on SitePoint that's still out there. I think I Googled myself a while ago, as you do from time to time, to see what people are seeing, and that tutorial for old school how to build a website thing from, like, oh God, it must be 8 years ago or more. I'm like, oh God, can you just take it down now?
Right.
Love it.
It's amazing. So you discovered the WordPress community in 2011. Is that what you said? Or
yeah, I had to freelance because all of the avenues of financial support that I thought I was going to get when I quit my job with that organization and went to university to do my master's degree didn't happen. So it was freelance or die or starve. And so for the 2009, I just worked my ass off full time, both freelancing and studying. And then at the end of that year, the next year, I had a business with a reasonably good footing. And so throughout that year, I was just building websites for people. And I got towards the end of 2010 and I'm like, I wonder if there's conferences for WordPress. And I Googled it. And fortunately, in the not too very distant future, there was WordCamp Melbourne happening in February of 2011. And it was $50. And I'm like, I don't understand this. But it's $50. And a ticket, return ticket to Sydney, you know, to Melbourne from Sydney, where I was living at the time, was, you know, a couple of hundred. And I'm like, I could do a conference for $250. I've got people to stay with. Like, there's a million things. Like, this is going to be the cheapest week in Melbourne ever. And so I went and I walked around and there's all these people who, you know, are now close friends, but, you know, Peter Wilson and Bronson Quick and all of these people who were like standing up on the stage doing these talks. And I'm like, I had that full on fangirl going, oh my God, you guys are amazing, but I couldn't possibly talk to you. I don't know anything. But I sat in a, you know, and that I learned about child things sitting next to somebody in a talk that I think Paul Gibbs was giving about multi-site, and somebody was explaining to me it was a total napkin conversation. This is what a child theme is. This is why you need to understand child themes. And I'm like, cool. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll figure this out. And so it was like that room, I had no idea, like none of us do, right? It was some of those first seminal moments. And like, I look now, I mean, I'm at Human Made because of half of those people. I have spoken at conferences all around the world because I made connections with those people and I met that community and got so excited about it that I started to build into it and have a career in WordPress because I built into that community. It was amazing. And so that was my first one, and then I've lost count of how many I've done since then.
It really is amazing. It's true.
Yeah, and you're on the all-women release team for WordPress 5.6.
I don't know what they thought, what they were thinking. Francesca pinged me just as that started to happen. And I'd put my name on that, you know, I think Josepha did that first tweet and I put my name on it and said, yeah, I'd be up for that. And then Francesca just glommed onto it. And she's like, D, we can have D.
Same thing happened to me. Exactly.
Yep.
So tell us, what is that like behind the scenes? What's happening? And you're
what's happening? This is the thing. I didn't even really know. So Francesca said, we'd love for you to be the release coordinator. I'm like, well, what does that mean? And we had some meetings about it. We talked about it. Basically, I'm project managing, not the whole project, but the process. So what happens at the moment, right up until beta went out Tuesday, a lot of what I've been doing and the cohort that are around me are doing is we're just running dev chat. So we're coordinating some of those conversations. We have a private channel where the major release squad hangs out and we talk a lot about what's going on. I've got this constant stream of people when I'm running a chat going and I'm not sure about something, I've just got this other little private channel that I can jump into and say, is this the right thing? Or should we be talking about this here? Or can I move people on? And so I'm the face of a much, much bigger organism behind all of that. And so at the moment, what I've been doing is, you know, planning the agendas, posting those. I run dev chat for the APAC cohort, which is the 0500 UTC chat. And then occasionally, depending on how I'm feeling and whether I really fancy getting up early in the morning, I'll then also run occasionally the 2000 chat as well. And then the transition, now the rubber has started hitting the road, of course, because we've started releasing. And so the next kind of big part of that role is to facilitate the release party process. So it's getting on top of understanding of what's all going on in the background, and there's a lot of technical stuff going on. And I think it's been really helpful for me to have that technical background to be able to read the scripts and go, okay, so when somebody says Travis, I actually know what they're talking about. When we're creating the package, I'm like, I've got a reasonable idea of what's going on. And then so what I'm also doing is helping document that so that future people who get to do this role, who may not be as technical but are also equally capable, can actually pick that up and go, oh, now I understand the background of what we're doing and can actually also participate as well. So it feels like a small thing, really. It's just organizing meetings and running. But, you know, this is a group of a huge number of people and it's trying to keep the conversation on target when we're in chat and not getting too carried away with dad jokes. I think in the release party, we ended up in a bit of a dad joke rabbit hole. So, like, come on, folks, come on back before we all start getting into, let's post our pet pictures. No. Settle down, folks. We've got some things that we need to do here. Let's get the job done. And we did, and it was reasonably smooth, and now people can start experimenting with 5-6, which is really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a part of the design team, and it's a lot of Slack conversation.
You have to get good at typing really fast, but it's wonderful to actually have that written archive. So it's a headache and a blessing all at once.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I like what you say, like, about having that technical background, to being able to help you with, because I see the same thing when I do design. And the project managers that I've worked with that have at least a knowledge of technical things are much easier to work with. And so that's like really great that you bring kind of both of those worlds together. You are a project manager, human made, you sit with a project lead. What does that mean?
Project manager, team lead. So we have eight or nine, I should have actually counted the numbers for him. The numbers aren't important. I have a number of project managers. We, as you can imagine, an agency of our size, we've got a number of project managers. We have them in all three of the regions that we work in, which is Europe, Middle East, Africa, Asia Pacific, and then the Americas. And my role is a management role. So HumanMade reached a size where we actually had to start being a little more intentional about how we look after the team. That it's not, you know, we hit reasonably close to 70 people. And where in the past, when I was there, it was 40 people. We all looked after each other. Once you start growing to that kind of size, you actually need to be more intentional about it. And this, my role as the team lead, was that intention. It's like, okay, so we've got these 8 project managers. Where do they want to go? What makes their work great? What do they enjoy? How do they want to progress? How do we address any issues? And so my role is very much a coaching leadership role. I'm watching them pick up and run with Agile and all of these amazing different ways of doing things. And I'm a Scrum Master and I have that Agile experience, but seeing people dive in and watch them just run miles ahead of where I am now. And so it's interesting at the moment to be going, oh yeah, am I still a project manager? I don't currently have a project, an external client project that I'm working on. And so I'm working on a bunch of stuff internally. But yeah, most of my time at the moment is making sure that they have what they need and are going where they want to go and have somewhere that they can escalate some of the issues that they're dealing with. That comes through me.
That's awesome.
It's kind of fun. It's been interesting transitioning. You know, I've gone from, you know, all of those other random careers before I hit tech and then doing WordPress and freelancing. And hitting that point where I didn't want to be running my own business anymore. I wanted to do the work, but I didn't want to run a business, because if I wanted to keep progressing and growing, I was then going to have to hire staff, and I didn't want to do that. And I was shopping out every part that I could that I couldn't do well, which was things like bookkeeping and doing your taxes and all those things that are the hard parts for me of running a business. To that point where watching development change and then knowing how much I was going to have to learn to keep up, you know, when JavaScript became so dominant, I'm like, oh, I don't think I can go there. And so HumanMade came along, or a number of other things came along, but HumanMade in the end came along that went, okay, I don't need to contract to do this anymore. I could be employed to do this.
How was your experience with JavaScript? Because for me, it's a hate relationship.
I took one look at it and said, yeah, I don't want to do that. So I can see those winds starting to change, right? I did a WordCamp talk. I heard Matt say that thing, learn JavaScript deeply, and I could see where that was going. And I actually go, okay, so I have an option here. I either have to dive in if I'm going to keep progressing and being able to do what I do for my clients, or I need to pivot I change tack basically and just push more into the project management side of things at that point, because I needed to stay present and current, but I wasn't able to do that and on that same trajectory. So moving off to the different direction kind of made that happen.
I feel like I've did kind of a similar thing. So yeah. I can relate.
Yeah.
Hi, women and WP listeners. This is Angela with a quick message from our sponsor, WP Remote. WP Remote is a dedicated care plan platform that can help fuel your agency's growth with maintenance care plans for your clients' websites. WP Remote provides an automated workflow for you to manage multiple sites from a central dashboard with one-click updates, incremental backups, automated malware scans, firewall, uptime monitor, and more. WP Remote is created by the same great folks behind Blog Vault, Malcare, and Migrate Guru. Save time, increase your revenue, and make your clients happy by trying WP Remote for free today at wpremote.com/womeninWP. And now on with the show.
Your employees, where are they located?
So my reports, the individual contributors, we call them. I have 1, 2, 3 in Europe, 1 in India, 1 in Australia with me, and 2 in Americas, 1 in Canada and 1 in the US. So my days are often broken between meetings in the morning with the Americas.
Yeah, how do you schedule meetings on that range?
When I started, I was kind of deep into the servant leadership thing, going, if anybody has to be inconvenienced, it's always going to have to be me. That wasn't sustainable for the long term, because that meant 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. meetings for the Americas crew, so that they were still having their meetings within work hours. And then 7, 8, and sometimes even 9 p.m. meetings for EMEA. I have gradually... So initially I would do those and then take time during the day, but it's really, really easy just to get your head down and get stuck in, and then find yourself you've worked 14 hours without realizing. Not sustainable, as you can imagine. And so we would then I've gradually managed to, you know, we're a global company. We understand that all of us are going to at different times be inconvenienced, just by the nature of the fact that there aren't really very often any of us all in the same town, let alone the same time zone. And so I'm still doing meetings outside of work hours. That's always going to be a feature of what I'm doing, but I'm a lot more careful now about how I schedule that. I keep my meetings to Tuesdays to Thursday. So that, I have a standing Monday dinner with a friend. I have Friday night, and I'm like, you know what? I hit Friday night. I don't want to be doing a 9 p.m. call. So I block it all out in my calendar so that people don't just scurry their way in there and go, hey, I saw a slot. I'm just going to add in a call. And I'm like, sorry, you can do.
Yeah, that's something I feel like it takes a long time to learn. The kind of whole, like, I had to get to the, like, honestly, like, getting into like CrossFit classes or some sort of thing that was like every day, every other week, every other day, or whatever it was, and then just have that blocked on my schedule, because right. that helped dictate that I wasn't going to be working like 14 hours one day.
Yeah
Smart.
I got into, you know, I won't get into that. I think Angela was going to ask a question, and then
I was just going to say, Allie, you're working with a big team too, aren't you, with WP Buffs? Can you relate to what Dee's experience? Do you have people in different time zones as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have people all throughout South and Central America. We have a handful of people in Europe. We have one person in Serbia. I think she's the furthest away. And now we just have one new person in Australia, I believe. But the thing about Buffs is we have very few meetings, because so much of our work is like answering tickets in the desk, that everyone can work very, very independently. So we don't, just by the nature of what we do, we don't have necessarily that problem. But I have had situations where it's like, I really need to ask someone a question or get in touch with somebody to follow up on, you know, one of their tickets or one of their messages. And it's like, oh, they're not going to be awake for another 10 hours or so. But yeah, I don't have anything like what Dee was going through at all.
We try and operate fairly asynchronously, but it's hard. So I've had to be really, really strict about notifications on Slack, because it would be really easy for me just to bounce. And I mean, it's a family-friendly, family-oriented sense within the company. Like, the culture within the company is really collegial. I have a very much a pull approach to Slack, so I don't have any notifications on any of my devices. But I am constantly just jumping in to see what's going on. Oh, who's there? Oh, someone's there. I can have a quick chat. So it's really, really, and I feel like I'm kidding myself, really, if I think that even that by only having a pull approach to it instead of a push approach, I'm minimizing the distractions. But it's a welcome distraction. But one of the biggest challenges that I'm navigating at the moment, I'm project managing our retreat. Now, in normal circumstances, we would all shut down for a week and we would all go somewhere. And of course, we can't do that. I really, really wish we could do that. But we can't.
What are you doing instead?
So we Well, we are planning a whole series of events over a 6-week period, which has a whole lot of different challenges. This will be jump in and out. You can attend what you wish to attend. Some of them are knowledge sharing, some of them are team building, some of them are social events. So we've got a whole different series of events. I wonder if we look back on it and go, we probably should have shut everything down for that week that we would normally have done and then just done a whole bunch of online events in one concentrated period. But this is an experiment. We'll see how it goes. Because at the moment, planning all of the allocation and resourcing around all of that's actually quite difficult. But, you know, I'm using Slack workflows, getting to tweak my technical skills again, using Slack workflows to make a scavenger hunt for the whole team. I can't wait to write a post about that, assuming that it goes well. Nice. We'll see what happens. If it's a total disaster, you won't hear anything else.
How many people total at Human Made now?
I think we're closing. We had quite a lot of transition during COVID. And so I think we're somewhere around 65. We were up to 70. I think we're slowly building up again. We've had a rush of hiring going on lately.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah, herding those kinds of cats over 3 time zones and multiple cultures, that's going to be fun too.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's a good challenge. I'm really loving it. I can't wait to read that. Yeah.
You could write a book.
I could.
You should get in touch with the organizers of WordCamp Austin and see if you can do some of the retreat in VR. Get everyone VR headsets.
That would be amazing. Somebody did suggest it at one point, but and a few of the team, like I think there may well end up being a VR event at some point, because quite a few of the team, well, we have all these interest channels, quite a few of the team in the interest gaming channel has VR headsets, so we could.
For WordCamp Denver, we had local musicians perform in between sessions, and so awesome. Perhaps if you had some musicians from different parts of the world that were local that could perform, then people would want to tune in because it would be like a party.
That would be so fun. Yeah.
It'd be awesome.
Really cool. One of our,
people liked that. It was just interesting how well that was received.
It takes you out of the ordinary everyday. One of our team members is a DJ, and so he's got a couple of sets that he's going to throw together.
Nice.
We've got somebody's going to do a virtual escape room. I'm pretty confident we're going to have a number of little different outposts of About Us games popping up. There's the State of the Humans, which is the kind of big address from the C-level team about where we're going and where we've been and hack projects and workshops. And hopefully by the time that we've all done it, we'll all come away and go, yeah, that was a good experience. That was fun.
I'm attending a virtual dance party on Friday, actually. So
awesome.
We'll see how that goes. And I think it's also like a costume. I don't know, but.
That sounds amazing, Tracy. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And it's all TikTok people, so I'm sure they'll be documented.
Of course it is. It'll be so good. I follow your TikTok. I'm like, I uninstalled TikTok. I did the whole TikTok panic and I uninstalled it. But every time something pops up on Twitter from you, I'm like, I jump in and have a look and then end up in a rabbit hole, of course, following all the lines through there.
I love it.
How's COVID been treating everyone with Human Made and with you and Australia? Like, give us a view of the world from where you are. We're in the US. We know what's happening for us, which is in our different.
We know what's happening for you too.
Yeah, kind of a nightmare.
And I'm so sorry. So I'm in Melbourne, Victoria. And so we went into lockdown, the first lockdown at the beginning of March. And I was a little earlier than the rest of the state because I flew back from New Zealand and had 2 weeks mandatory quarantine when I came back from New Zealand. So I think I went into quarantine on the 17th of March and on the 1st of July. And what that looked like is very different than what we ended up in the second round. So that was, you know, we didn't have a curfew in that first round. That was all quite tame. And then 1st of July, we went back to some semblance of normal. And I had a booking at a restaurant. And the people that I was going to go to the restaurant with went to a Black Lives Matter rally. Super important. Absolutely don't deny the need for them to have done that. But then we were all like, I wonder if we put ourselves at risk at that point. Maybe we should just, we'll just cancel the booking. And then on the 1st of August, we went into hard lockdown, and that's 5K radius limit. That's a curfew at 8 p.m. initially, and then lifted later to 9 p.m. That's there were four reasons you were allowed out of the house. We were allowed to go out to do the grocery shopping, but only one person from the household was allowed to do that. You were allowed out for an hour to exercise, which was later lifted to 2 hours for exercise. And so, and that was just, the top level in a long list. And gradually, we were hitting this point, and I know that I say this to people who are seeing thousands of cases a day, but we hit this point where our highest number of cases a day was 750, I think, and 20 deaths. And so our fairly liberal-leaning government said, we're not having it. And so, people of Victoria, we are in this together. And for the most part, it was mostly metropolitan Melbourne, which is, of course, the city that I'm in. This is how we're going to deal with it. And we have dealt with it. And there have been hiccups along the way. There was an outbreak because of, and I won't even get into it. I'll end up in a political discourse, and you really don't want that. but only now. So I have been in lockdown effectively of some kind for 7 months.
Wow.
And we are now down to overnight, one, maybe two cases a day. So it is possible, but it took the whole collective group of people living in Victoria to go, we're in. And so at the beginning of November, we went back to the hairdresser. You can tell I don't really need to. And God bless him. At one point, he actually packaged up the dye for me because it was double that length and sent it to me, charged me $50 for it, and then sent me a video to say, here's how you do it, Dee.
Oh, love it.
He went, God bless. Yeah, and so there's all sorts of, as hard as all of that has been, there has been so many stories like that are also, oh my God, this has given us an opportunity to connect with people that we wouldn't have otherwise. Like, I know all of my neighbours. I'm in a building, there's five apartments. I know all of my neighbours. In my first lockdown, one of them knocked on the door and said, hey, I understand you. If you're going to be stuck here for a bit, what can we do? And they went and did grocery shopping for me. Like, all of those stories have been amazing. And hopefully, come 1st of November, I'm now allowed to go 25Ks from my house. So my girlfriends and I, we had this one little sliver of crossover, and we found a park in that, and we could go and sit in the park for 2 hours. And so the first time I'd seen Fiona in months, since March, we sat in a park last Sunday.
Wow. Are the borders, the states still closed?
Well, in theory.
So we okay.
so the government set up, here we go, sorry. The government set up this travel bubble between Australia and New Zealand. So New Zealanders could come from New Zealand to either New South Wales or Northern Territory. But they're not allowed to go to Queensland. They're not allowed to go to Victoria or South Australia or Western Australia. What happens? They all arrive in Sydney. And then I think 50 different people from New Zealand ended up in all of the states they're not supposed to be in. So we have the word bubble, but no practical responsibility to actually make sure that doesn't happen.
I will put this in a little perspective. Melbourne has a population about the population of the state of Colorado where I live. We are averaging 1,080 cases a day, and we have people constantly complaining just because they have to wear masks to the grocery store.
It does my head in.
We have never had any restrictions on the level that you have had at all, The most is like, okay, we need to limit the number of people in restaurants. We haven't had, when we had lockdown, it wasn't like a real lockdown. There was no curfew. There was, people stayed home simply because things were closed. We had businesses were closed, and that was what our lockdown was. But But it is interesting. I've been watching Australia carefully, and particularly Melbourne, and noticing like, wow, when your cases started to go up, you were just shut that stuff down.
We're not having it.
Interesting. That's it makes so much sense.
It's been hard, and so many people, you know, about 6 months in, I was reaching my limit. I ended up taking a couple of mental health days off at work because I'm like, I'm not coping. Every little thing that I would see would make me burst into tears. Mm. And there's so much political wrangling going on here in the media. It has not been popular. We've got the conservative media saying, you've got to open up for these businesses, yes. the economy. You've got all of that going on. And because we do have, from my perspective, the luxury of a Liberal government, and I use that word small little Liberal because our Conservative Party is called the Liberal Party. Don't even get me started on that. So we have a small letter Liberal government here in Victoria, and that whole sense of we don't want any more people to die has been the driving thing, right? And we know it's hard, but it hasn't been perfect. The implementation hasn't been perfect. You know, any of these things. I mean, it's unprecedented to use that hideously overused word. And so to have the expectations on the government to be able to do it right the first time when we don't have experience of having to do this a first time at any other time but there are less people dead. And that's the thing that I just keep holding on to. Less people have died. If my staying home has meant that somebody else didn't get it and somebody else didn't lose a family member, then I'm okay. But I'm ridiculously privileged. I'm used to working at home. I work for a company that has weathered this reasonably well so far that, I haven't lost my job, and so many people have. I've had some inconvenience for 7 months. And at the end of the day, I've been looking at, my grandparents went through a war. I will weather my minor, very privileged inconvenience if it means that, at the end of the day, we're all stronger because of it.
That's so wonderful. I mean, so much of it is about perspective. And I think if you have a strong sense of perspective and self-awareness, it's a lot easier. I mean, I'm getting married in less than 2 weeks, and we had to shrink our wedding down to two friends and my mom. I feel the same exact way as, I'm going to like cry. I feel the same way as you, where it's like, I can be okay with that if it means that my family and friends are going to be safe. Like, if one person came and got sick, I couldn't live with that, you know? Yeah. So I think that's an incredibly strong way of thinking about it when you're starting to feel all of this pressure is like, I'm doing what I have to do, for others.
I'm part of a much, much bigger story, right? It's like I hate that I've canceled like 4 trips. One of the things that I love about my job and I love about what we do is that I get to travel and I get to meet you guys and hang out. And like, I love that stuff. And I get to meet my friends, my humans, the other human-made team, and we get to hang out and have a few wines and play stupid board games all the things that I absolutely love to do. But we are part of so much of a bigger picture. Like, there's so much unrest and so many things happening, even for our team members at the moment, and I'm like, I couldn't go outside. Like, seriously, what am I? I mean, I look at my friends in America and go, well, all of the stuff that you guys are walking through at the moment. And I'm like, I couldn't go outside. What have I got to complain about? I've got nothing to complain about.
Well, so we have a mask mandate in Wisconsin, and we are now one of the hotspots. Yay. Yeah. Because everyone's like, no, I don't want to. I was like, okay, well, they don't work. Well, that's fine. Then if it don't work, then you lose putting some fabric over your face. If they do work, you save a life. Like,
exactly.
That kind of like, what's
the willing to make that gamble?
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like, I've been going to the protests every so often, and then, but everyone's wearing masks. I get tested right afterwards and negative. Like, so it's like one of those things. I was like, well, they do actually kind of work. And so it's just, it's frustrating to me because, yeah, like you said, we have the privilege. I mean, I did lose my job, but I also freelance. I work on the internet. I work in technology, which is an industry that's going to survive this and will survive just fine. But there's other ones that will probably not. Yeah. And there's restaurants and places that are going to close. And like, I hate seeing that. But like, it's like you said, it's just like perspective here. It's a,
well, I love some of the creative things that I've seen develop out of this. So, and the creative things that have relied on our kinds of technology to actually happen. So there is a website that sprung up where we are, because again, this has been months, and some of the higher end restaurants have all gathered together and are all part of this website, and you can order all of your favorites from there to get delivered to your house.
Yep.
You know, some, there'll be some finishing.
Several of them.
Like the restaurant that Pete and I were meant to go to in that break in between is our favorite, and they're on that list, and so I can order their beautiful meals and come to my, like, we have our Monday night dinner, the place that they go to, they do this I'm not a vegetarian, we do this amazing chicken schnitzel. And they, I've had that delivered like 3 or 4 times. My little restaurant across the road, they just do takeaways, and so I can go. And so all of so there's all of those creative things happening of, I can get all of these things delivered, which it's the web that's making that happen, and it's WordPress that's making that happen for some of those people. I love that, but it's giving some of the people in our industry an opportunity to go, oh, let's look, show us what we can do to help your business survive, which I think is phenomenal. And I get to eat my favorite things and so on.
I feel the same. I was like, I love it. I was like, you know, especially since, you know, I did have a job for most of the time. So I was like, okay, my duty is to order food from these good restaurants that I want to see survive, and buy this artwork from local artists that to fill all of my walls with art. I was like, everything I possibly can do. And I'm sure I gained like 15 pounds because I'm like, all of this is such good food.
I'm telling you how many
I it's a sacrifice I was willing to make for the greater good.
I
appreciate your sacrifice.
Events online, like I have a comedian whom I, and a musician whom I follow, who's hilarious and has been documenting this and basically keeping Melbourne alive and entertained throughout the whole of this. And so I'm patron for a number of people, just to like, hey, if this is the thing that you're putting your tip jar out so that we can help, because the arts has been absolutely, that's the thing that restaurants can do a little bit more, but the arts has really suffered and will continue to suffer. I had tickets to go and see the Harry Potter thing. They got cancelled very, very early on. Mm-hmm. I have tickets for Hamilton in Sydney in March, opening night. And I am, everything in me is like,
I know I have a symphony, subscription to the symphony, some box seats in the symphony. And I was like, and now that's online and kind of, and I'm like, but like,
not the same.
Yeah.
It has been so great to talk to you. And Allie, we want to see wedding photos.
Yeah.
You are going to be the most gorgeous bride. It is going to be wonderful.
So fun.
Oh, I'm going to start crying. We love you. We just being able to spend time with the, just the four of us, even online, and Allie gets to be a guest co-host and every now and then, and her company, like your company, you know, allows her to take time to contribute to various projects, including our podcast, which is kind of awesome. So Dee, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
I think if you Google The Web Princess, you'll pretty much find me on Twitter. I've been a little bit more active there. I spent years not doing Twitter at all. And I think this whole pandemic has made it easier for me to get back into that. So The Web Princess on Twitter, on Instagram. Yeah, or Google Detail. I'm pretty much the only one out there at this stage. So,
well, lovely. Stay safe. Eat good food. And we hope to see you in real life soon.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter or join our Facebook group. We would be honored if you subscribe to the show. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Finally, if you want to be on the show or know someone who would, visit our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.